When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 46. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I'm delighted to be staying in Wales and heading down to Wenvo near Cardiff to talk to dairy farmer Abby Reader. Abby, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Will. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We've just been talking about the weather, haven't we? We've had rain and wind and sideways sleet and all sorts here today, but you've had a pretty decent day down there.
Yeah, well, the sun shines on the righteous, I think, and we have been lucky to see the sun today, so I am quite grateful.
Yeah, well, I've sort of missed most of my work this morning, and I took the kids to a party in a play barn. So to be fair, I'd probably have rather been outside in the rain and sleet. it's been hard work, but there you go. So you're based in South East Wales then. Tell us a bit about the area that you live, because you're pretty close to Cardiff, aren't you?
That's right. As the crow flies, I'm, you know, a couple, 3 miles from the centre of Cardiff. I went to school in the centre of Cardiff. We're quite lucky as a farm. You wouldn't know that we were so urban. You can't see any houses or street lights around you. And nobody knows we're here. We're in behind a golf course, and that's quite good. But we've got all the amenities on our doorstep, but you know, we're hidden away in a bit of a backwater.
Yeah. Okay. And how long have the family been there in that area?
My family have been on this farm since the mid 40s.
Yeah, okay.
And they were tenants then. They managed to buy the farm then in the 60s.
Yeah.
And we've since been able to purchase a little bit more land adjacent to this land. That was through the 80s. And so the size it is today, we do rent a little bit of extra land in. So sometimes the size changes, but it's about 700 acres at the minute.
Yeah. Okay. So you're pretty sizable farm then.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So what are you doing on the farm? I know you're primarily a dairy farm.
Yeah, we're mainly a dairy farm. So we're milking 180 cows. And we're looking to increase that herd size up to about 220 now over the next 5 years. On top of that, we do sheep. Back in the day, we used to have about 800 sheep. But that's scaled right back down now. So it's about 150 breeding ewes. And they're largely grazing ground that we either can't reach with cattle or we're unable to plough. Yeah. And then other than that, we do some arable crops. We used to do quite a lot of arable, probably, for our area, probably about 300 acres, but that's scaled back down a bit now to 150. We do a lot more grassland. There's a good market here for haylage for horses. So we try and maximize that.
Yeah. Okay. And you're a fairly flat farm, fairly lowland.
Yeah, it is quite flat. I suppose it's a gently rolling valley. So you know, it's you can look around and see most of your ground all about you, which is always quite nice. But yeah, it is quite flat.
Okay. And you're milking 180 cows, you said there. Are they all, what breed are they?
Right, approximately half the herd is Holstein Friesian. But the other half of the herd, so half being about 90 cows, the other half is Dairy Shorthorn. So they date back to my grandfather's time and his father before him. And they're an old native British breed to the UK. They're something that everybody had, well, lots of people had during the war. And then I suppose as genetics came into this country and we had more access to black and white, to our Holstein Friesians, lots of people started to swap over because that breed offers more milk. I suppose on this farm, my father made the decision that he would like to preserve a certain proportion of the Dairy Shorthorns to keep that breed alive. And he won an award, gosh, back in the days of the Royal Show, I think it was probably one of the last shows, he won an award for the highest yielding Dairy Shorthorn in the UK. Oh, and it was at that point he decided to make sure that we did preserve that breed, because we only had about 12 cows then at the time, and we've managed to build up from there. So today we've got about 90. They live longer, and just by happy circumstance, they seem to throw a lot of gills. So
So what are the main difference between the two breeds, just for people who might not know?
Okay, well, obviously your Holstein Friesian is your typical black and white cow. If you're driving along a country road and you see a black and white cow in the field, chances are it's a Holstein Friesian. With a Dairy Shorthorn, their colours are red and white. And the most traditional colour for a Dairy Shorthorn is a roan colour, which is like a dappling or a mottled red and white. But otherwise, you could get an all red cow or an all white cow. And if you did a little bit of blending, then you might get a bit of a mix and match again, I suppose. But we try to preserve the pure breed. I'm not particularly interested in blending. I think you're either one breed or the other. So we try and preserve the pureness.
So what's your role in the business then? What are you doing day to day?
Right, I manage the dairy herd, so I will chip in on other areas. I don't do a huge amount with the sheep anymore, although I will say sheep were my first love. That was that was largely what I grew up doing, as lots of kids do. But then when I came home from college, the dairy became my main focus, largely because that was my father's focus, and we worked together. I've also done my fair share of corn carting and bale hauling for the arable side, and I do less and less of that every year, and I don't particularly miss it. I look after the cows. I've got one young lad who works for me full time, Luke, and then I've got a team of, well, two release milkers who do sort of 2, 3, 4, 5 milkings, whatever, a week. And I've got one guy who works part time, who works on the golf course near us, and he'll come in and give me a hand when I need to. Otherwise, he helps out on the rest of the farm. So yeah, we're lucky for staff. We've got some good people, and you know, I rely on them a lot.
Well, and what time do you get up in the morning? What time do you start?
I milk Mondays to Thursdays in the morning, so I'll get up at about 4:20.
That's try
to be out the door. Try to be out the door by about 10 to 5 to start milking then at 5 o'clock. So I'm not a fan of mornings. I sleep with 3 alarm clocks. Just in case, and probably I've defied my alarms, or probably 3 times, thankfully, in the last 14 years, so that's not too bad. That's my worst nightmare, not waking up in the morning.
I suppose it's just part of the territory, I suppose, though, isn't it, with milking cows?
Once you've been up, once you're up for sort of 10 minutes and you've finished, you know, hating the world for it, after those 10 minutes have gone by, it's the best time ever. It's so nice to sort of work on the farm before 8 o'clock, before people start turning up, the phone starts going, deliveries start arriving. You just have that peace and quiet, and it's the best time in the day.
Absolutely. So a couple of the guys you got working with you then are quite young people, aren't they? Is that something you're actively trying to do, get young people who are interested in a career in farming, give them a chance?
Yeah, well, my father's always had students. We've always had lambing students and a variety of vet students. And I guess it's just something that we just continued. My sister is a vet herself. I've seen what it is like to go through these sorts of courses. And obviously, I've come through agricultural college. So I understand what it's like to try and make your way in your chosen career, and I understand the stresses and strains, and if we can help anyone, I have a policy where I won't turn anyone away. And they make the day interesting. I mean, the lad who's working for me now, Luke, he's a new entrant into farming. He's doing a fantastic job. He's got a great career ahead of him. I've got another guy, Lawrence, who comes to me every Wednesday. He's also going to be a new entrant. His career's advice told him he was going to be a vet. Well, I can spot a vet by, you know, 100 paces away. And I could see that veterinary was probably not his real passion. And after a little bit of talking and a visit to a careers fair with Farmers Weekly, he decided he wanted to be a dairy farmer. And he's, you know, trying to fulfill his career in that area. And it's great to share their dreams and their goals and ambitions. And if I can help them in any way, then, you know, that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And knowing you and a bit about what you're doing there, I know you're always trying to improve the herd performance and profitability. How are you going about that at the moment?
Well, we look a lot at the performance of the herd. We're always trying to measure anything that we do, from calf mortality, incidence of mastitis, or mobility scoring, anything like that. We make sure that we keep scores monthly and compare, and we have an excellent relationship with our vet, who was a former vet student here on the farm and is now my full-time vet. And she has a really good understanding of what we do here on the farm. We use a lot of old buildings and old facilities here. We've got, you know, some sheds that date back to the 1800s, as well as we have new facilities. So we've got to work with what we've got. But if we can try and keep on top of our calving interval and anything really that affects the cow's performance, then, you know, we're always striving to do better and better and better.
And you're also doing a lot of environmental work on the farm, aren't you?
That's right. We're in an environmental scheme here in Wales called Glastir. We're actually in Glastir Advance. So that requires us to, you know, do a lot of fencing, maybe fencing off woodland or waterways or ditches and things like that. And obviously we're cutting our hedges at various intervals every 3 years, which brings its own challenges, really, especially when you're dealing with your landlord, who doesn't like scruffy looking hedges. We've done some pond restoration and hedgerow renewal and all sorts of things, really, with Glastir Advanced. But equally, we've got a very good relationship with an excellent club in our local village called the Wembo Wildlife Group. And they're just a team of such enthusiastic, fantastic people who come out here with all sorts of ideas. And they've planted orchards in various little corners of the farm, which are of little significance to us. And they're just great to have around, really. They make me feel a lot better about what we do in terms of environmental successes on this farm.
And you've got a couple of green flags for the farm because of that, haven't you?
That's right. I think, as I understand it from the Wembo Wildlife Group, we are the first farm, certainly in Wales, to receive a green flag award for a little environmental site on our farm. And if people want to know what a green flag is, it's basically an area that's open to the community and is doing some good for the environment at the same time. And you can come and have a look. So we're talking about just a small apple orchard. It's probably about a quarter of an acre, perhaps a bit less than that. And it's got some sort of wildflower planting in there to encourage insects and birds and things like that. And it's received a green flag, and they've since received a green flag on another small area of our farm for a similar project, and we're aiming for a third one now on a pond. And it's all down to their work and their enthusiasm, you know, it's a great story to tell.
Is that something you've sort of always done as a family? Have you always been that way inclined to trying to
I think farms in general are always doing all sorts of little bits and pieces for the environment. We just don't really make a big enough deal of it like we should, to sort of show it off to the public. Perhaps certainly our involvement with this local group has made us think a lot more about just the little things that we can do. You know, sometimes when you think of Glastir Advanced, and it wants you to put in your whole farm, and it can bring all sorts of challenges, particularly if you're a tenant farmer, it can bring all sorts of challenges. Whereas the Wembo Wildlife Group, they don't judge us as a farm, or they just come with little ideas, and all they want is a small section of insignificance for you, and they'll take care of it. It takes no time out of my day. You know, and it doesn't really adversely affect the farm. We're still producing to the same level that we were, and you know, that works for us.
That's fantastic. And then you also, I know you're very involved with Open Farm Sunday there, aren't you?
Yes, Open Farm Sunday. We've done it for 4 years now, and it's an absolutely fantastic initiative. I know it's approximately 400 farms in the UK take part, or just under take part in Open Farm Sunday, and I think there's about 9 of us in Wales. I would love to see more people do it. Yeah. When we did our first Open Farm Sunday 4 years ago, you know, I'm not going to lie, it was the scariest thing I'd done for quite a long time. You know, the thought of throwing your gates open, you know, onto farms which can be dangerous places, and they can, you know, people can be exposed to all sorts of bugs and various things, and you worry about people criticizing what you do. Mm. But I love this industry. I love my job. I want to be able to farm the same way that I am now, obviously doing better at what I do, but I want to be able to farm into the future. And if everyone is telling me that we need to reconnect with members of the public, then we need to reconnect with members of the public. And things like Open Farm Sunday and school visits are what we've got at the minute. You know, I hope there are more initiatives out there in the future, but this one is a fantastic one, and we just need to get behind it.
So what do you do then? What do you do at the farm? I know, because it's a lot more than just throwing open the gates and saying, come on in, isn't it?
Well, it's not. I had a question the other day, how much does it cost? As in, how much does it cost me as a farmer? So in terms of insurance, you're covered under your public liability insurance. If you're, we're insured with NSU Mutual and they cover us. Obviously, you need to have a conversation with your insurance company to say, look, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
But other than that, you're covered. So there was no cost there. The only cost we had on our first Open Farm Sunday was hiring a portaloo, which I think cost me about £45. And that was it. On our first Open Farm Sunday, we just signed up on the website. We put our details out, and I think I put a couple of flyers around the village, and we were expecting about 100 people, and we received 300. Now, some people might look at that and think, oh, I couldn't cope with 300 people. You can make your Open Farm Sunday as public or as private as you want. When you put your details onto the internet, you can say whether you want them to be open for the public to see, or whether it's just going to be a private event that you're going to be on invite only. You can have people that must register with you before they come. So there's all sorts of ways to control it. We had 300 on that event, and it went fairly well. I didn't feel like we had much to show. I mean, unless you're a farmer, you know, once you've seen one cow, you've seen them all, really, for lots of people. But they didn't have to pay to come, and people enjoyed it. So the next year, then, we were feeling a little bit more adventurous. So I put a sign up on our top road, and we live on the busiest road in Wales, which is the road which runs from the M4 to the airport.
Wow.
So I suppose lots of people saw it, and I was, you know, anticipating perhaps I wanted 400 people, because you always want to do better than you did the year before.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think now, I think it was 2,000 people descended on the farm in one day. And you know, it's probably just as well we didn't know they were coming beforehand, but it was a great day. We were a bit smarter by that year. I'd invited a couple of local stallholders. You know, I said, it's no charge, just come out and enrich our day, and if you want to sell some wares and things, that's up to you. And we had a caterer in then to do tea and coffee, so that took the pressure off us. It was great, and we've just gone on to do it from there. Last year we had 3,000 people on the farm. Next year I want 3,100. You need to keep pushing and trying to make the day better, and you know, improve on what you've done. But it is still scary 4 years on, and it will be scary in the fifth year, but it's essential, and you know, we just do it. I'm very grateful to all the farmers that come and help us. Whether they're driving tractors and trailers, or doing tours, or shearing sheep, or doing the catering for us, I'm very grateful to everyone who helps.
Okay, so throughout the year, you also have sort of children's groups, beavers, rainbows, holiday clubs, and you go out to schools every term to talk about dairy farming.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I get phone calls off schools every week. I could fill my entire year with school visits. It's amazing how many people want to come out, but you can only do so much. But yeah, I made a commitment that I would visit one school every term to do my bit. And usually one of my guys who milks for me, Ross, he'll come along with his tractor and you know, we try and do a bit of a duo act.
Yeah. Is it well received with the kids? You know, do they ask good questions? Are they interested?
Oh, very well. Yeah, very well. They love it. They love seeing the tractor. Yeah. Usually we take a wooden milking cow with us, which is strapped on the back of a trailer, and they get a chance to milk that. We might make butter or, you know, just talk about our day-to-day things. I might take a model of a farm with me. Depends what mood I'm in, really. But, you know, yeah, it's amazing to hear the sorts of questions that come out of their mouths. I can remember going to one school and we were grinding grain and one of the youngsters wanted to know if we were magicians. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's amazing to see their imagination, you know, just get really taken up by what we do.
And then moving on from that, then cows on tour. So tell us about that.
Cows on tour. Gosh, it was just one of those chance things that happened. The son of a neighbour of ours, a neighbouring dairy farmer, he was living in London, and he got in touch to say he had been invited to visit a school and speak to a class of 30 children about dairy farming, and could he borrow some of my Open Farm Sunday resources, which wasn't a problem at all. And I said, "Oh, do you want to borrow the wooden milking cow if you can face taking it up to London?" And I suppose one thing led to another, and I sort of got thinking about it, and I thought, gosh, you're in London. Like, I've been doing a rural leadership course at the time, Agri Academy, which if anyone's in Wales and under 35, you really need to think about applying for Agri Academy. It's a great course. But it made me think a lot about our responsibility as an industry to promoting what we do. Plus, I just got involved with the NFU, and Stephen James, who was president at the time, was, you know, always talking about, you know, we need to reconnect with the public.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, imagine if we went up to London and we spoke to the whole school, and loads of farmers went, and you know, we told them all about what we did, because these youngsters, you know, they were from, well, they were living in quite a low income area in London. It was right next to Holloway Prison. So, you know, they're quite a different background to us. And anyway, it took off. We discussed it between us over the phone. I asked a few other farmers if they could get involved. And our group secretary from NFU Mutual sort of said, right, you know, let's get a plan together and let's do it. And before we knew it, there were 16 of us on our way to London with towing a stock trailer with a few chickens and a wooden cow and various little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And we just landed in this playground, and we maximized on the media. I mean, I got in touch with anyone I could think of, and the media really went with it. And that's the secret to Cows on Tour. There's lots of people that visit schools and do lots of amazing things. The only secret with Cows on Tour is we tell the world what we're doing, because, you know, we don't just want to benefit ourselves and the school. We need to benefit the industry. So you need to spread the word. And it took off. We reached 500,000 people on Twitter. We had a special mention in the Senate. The brother of the dairy farmer whose son had sort of got me involved in this, he does a milk round. He took on 14 extra customers on his milk round. So many good things came out of that day. And it's just spurred us on, really, to keep going.
Absolutely. Well, that's fantastic. I mean, it's very... what's coming through with all that is you're very, you know, it was obviously very keen to open up the farm to members of the public and spread the word about what we do as an industry. Why do you think that is important that we do that?
Well, one of the most obvious things at the minute, we're in the month of February. Mm-hmm. We've just come out of Veganuary, and it appears that we're about to go into meaty March. There's so many myths out there about what we do. And there's so many, you know, if we talk about February, I've been called in the last, just fortnight, a murderer and a rapist and a kidnapper and enslaving animals. And it's wrong. It's wrong, and we have to stop it. We've got to stop these tales and these stories and these lies.
Yeah.
And we need to start spreading the positive word and you know, really showing people who we are and what we do so that they believe in us and trust us. And I want every single person who walks into a supermarket and picks up a bottle of milk or a joint of meat or whatever it is, some fruit veg, when they pick it up, I want them to think there's a British label on that, or there's a Welsh label on it, Scottish, English, whatever. I am glad to be supporting this industry because the standards that are being upheld by this industry are worthy of me making this purchase. And that's really what we have to aim to do.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I know. I couldn't agree more. Okay, well, going back a few years then, I was interested to see that you actually went to a convent school and you were taught by nuns in the centre of Cardiff. I wasn't quite expecting that.
That was interesting. It's always good to have a slightly diverse childhood, isn't it? I went. My school was right in the heart of Cardiff. I think I was the only farmer's daughter in the school. It was an all-girls school, and it was a convent school. I'm not Catholic, but there were three nuns in the school. Obviously, everyone else then was sort of regular teachers, for want of a better way to put it.
Uh-huh.
And we used to be divided up for religious lessons. You'd have your Catholic and your non-Catholic RE lessons,
yeah,
which is interesting. Very interesting being raised by nuns. The unusual people. It was a good way to grow up.
Must have been quite. How was it like being the only farm kid in the school?
I was definitely one of the odd ones out. I was a slightly unusual person that, you know, wasn't interested in hanging around in the centre of Cardiff on the weekends because I was too busy climbing trees or, you know, running around in the dirt or going out on a bike or something. I was slightly obscure. it was a good time.
Yeah.
I can't say I ever particularly enjoyed school. I didn't dislike it, but wasn't really where I wanted to be. I wanted to be outside.
Yeah, okay. So at that time then, where were you thinking that your future lied on the family farm or elsewhere?
No, I wasn't. I suppose that was the interesting thing. Careers advice in school was useless. I mean, I went on from the convent school to a sixth form college again in the heart of Cardiff. And my careers advice then was, you need to become a hotel manager. That was apparently I think it was a Morrison test, some sort of test,
okay.
Anyway.
I remember those weird tests we had back in the day. I think I was advised to be a zookeeper or something random like that.
Okay, but at least I had a slight correlation to what you've ended up doing.
It
wasn't what I wanted to do. And basically, no. I ended up finishing my A-levels, not having a clue what I wanted to do. My parents weren't keen to put any pressure on me, you know, to come into the business. It was up to me. Because having gone to school in a city centre and not really, I wasn't involved with young farmers at the time, and we are in a backwater, so we were on sort of the fringe of the farming community, so I never really grew up, you know, as your typical farm kid.
Yeah.
So it was only a chance phone call by it must have been a sales rep, whoever it is, I'm deeply indebted to them. They rang me up, I was taking... It was a bit of a gap year. I wouldn't really describe it as a gap year. I was just mooching around wondering what earth I was going to do with my life. And he said to me, you want to apply to the Royal Agricultural College? You know, go there. And I was like, what's there? And he said, well, it's an agricultural college. You know, you can go and learn about farming. And I couldn't believe it. I put the phone down. I got straight back on the phone then to the Agricultural College. I found out their number and said, can you send me a prospectus? And within a week, I'd filled out a UCAS form and sent it off, and I got accepted, and I didn't look back from there. It was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, well, I was quite interested because when you told me about this, you said you didn't realize that you could do that in agriculture. Well, and I didn't either. I didn't have a very similar story actually with me. I didn't have a clue that you could do that. We had very poor careers advice back in the 90s, didn't we?
Terrible, dreadful.
Yeah. So you enjoyed it in there, Cirencester. I'm sure you did.
Yeah. Some of the best years ever spent there. I did a degree in agriculture, and I loved it so much I stayed on and did a postgraduate degree in farm business management.
Yeah.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. And anyone who's thinking of a career in agriculture, I appreciate that university or college isn't for everyone, but I strongly recommend that it's very important you get skills and qualifications and that you keep learning throughout your career, because things change a lot and these skills can set you up for life.
Absolutely. So moving on from there, then you did eventually mention that you weren't really in Young Farmers before then, but presumably you got involved afterwards.
Yeah, obviously once I came home from agricultural college, it was a bit of a culture shock really, because you know that agricultural world that I'd been living in just vanished, and it was me and the farm. So I joined Young Farmers. A friend of mine, I say from down the road, but from not that far away, Victoria. She decided as well that we could both join Young Farmers and go along and see what it was like, and we've been hooked on it ever since.
So yeah,
you never really leave Young Farmers, do you?
No. I think we're very lucky with it in the UK, aren't we? Rural areas. It's one of those things you sort of just take for granted a bit. But if you've got a decent Young Farmers club around you, it's worth its weight in gold, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Your university friends are friends for life, but your Young Farmer friends in your own area, the people that are there for you all the time, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's some of the highlights of being involved with Young Farmers?
Well, my club, which is mainly Young Farmers, part of Glamorgan Young Farmers, is particularly interested in public speaking.
Okay.
So we did a lot of debating and after dinner speaking. We do a lot with, well, we're in Panto year at the minute. So we're always very competitive with that. That was always good. It was always good to do the trips with Young Farmers. Obviously, the social nights are fantastic.
Yeah. So the public speaking, doing that then obviously stood you in good stead for future committee roles and NFU and things like that.
Yeah, it did. I was quite lucky, really. My parents had always, that was one thing they had always been quite keen on, was making sure that I had sort of good public speaking skills, I suppose. And it was something that I had done in school from the age of, gosh, 7 upwards, I think it was. So that was quite useful. And then it was great then going into Young Farmers to be able to put those skills into an actual practice, because that's the nice thing with Young Farmers. It's very clever, the competitions. They very cleverly teach you what you need for the future. I suppose at least it gave me a bit of confidence going forward.
Yeah, okay. And you're also on your local show committee, Vale of Glamorgan Show. And didn't you get the Secretary of State for Wales to lead a heifer for you there?
Yes, that's right. The Secretary of State for Wales is also my local MP, Alan Cairn.
Yeah.
And he has recently visited the farm, and it was about a month before the show, and we were sort of starting to think about training. I'm sure some people who are regular showgoers would be wincing at that, but we tend to like the last minute pressure kind of thing. Ross, again, one of my staff members, he said to Alan, "Oh, would you like to lead a heifer at the show?" And I can remember thinking, "Oh my goodness, this isn't going to go quite well." But Alan was delighted, so I thought, "Well, if you're keen, then you know." So we trained up this year old heifer, Marjorie, and he turned up on the day in a white suit, It was a white suit. I couldn't believe it.
And, a white suit.
I passed, I passed him the end of the lead rope for Marjorie to take around the ring, and she was a little madam. And I'd worked really hard on her to make sure that she led well. But of course, she was quite tame by then, and she could spot him coming a mile off. She could spot someone that she could overrule, and she dragged him all the way around the ring. But in fairness, he smiled all the way around. Even when he came, I think he came last but one. It was a bit unfortunate, but she dribbled all over him.
Yeah,
and just left black hair all over his suit. So I was a little bit horrified, but he still talks about it now, so that's a good thing.
Oh, well, fair play to him for giving it a go, then.
Yeah.
Okay, so LFU then. When did you get involved with that? When your involvement start?
I suppose I first got involved with NFU back in 2012 when we had the milk protests, and obviously they were running the SOS Dairy campaign. And in all honesty, my depth of knowledge of NFU up until that time was pretty limited. Mm-hmm. But I was suddenly thrown on a bus heading up to London to take part in this protest with a few other farmers from the area. It was our group secretary that took us up. And obviously there were a number of protests then after that outside the various milk processing plants. And I participated in that. You'd milk in the morning, milk in the evening, jump in a car with a neighbour, shoot down to your local processor, protest outside, come back at midnight, get up again and milk, and do the whole cycle again. But what really struck me was, particularly at the time, the SOS Dairy campaign at that time, it fitted the problem, and it worked, and it opened my eyes really to exactly what NFU is about and the sort of results that can come from it, particularly when we all stick together. There's no point NFU having all these bright ideas and then the rest of us not coming up behind it to push it, and it worked. And we did a protest then outside a supermarket in our local area, obviously a friendly protest, but the farming neighbour sort of pushed me forward as their spokesperson. I think it was more because they didn't want to do it. But, it just struck me how important it is to participate and get involved, because otherwise, how can you moan about the situation if you're not trying to make it better? And then a year later, I was voted in as vice chairman of Glamorgan NFU Cymru. And then I became chairman a year after that, which I've done it for 4 years now, so I stepped down this month in a couple of weeks actually, so it's going to be a bit of a shock to the system having been chairman for 4 years. But it's been fantastic. I have thoroughly enjoyed every second of being county chair. It's grown me as a person. It's the networking has been unbelievable. The knowledge I've got of the industry is far, far greater than you know ever I could have imagined, and I've just made loads of friends. So, for anyone who's thinking about becoming a county chair or a branch chair and would like a go, go for it. Go for it. And don't just stick your hand in the air and say, yeah, I'll do it. You know, give it absolutely everything and drive everything you can for that county and for your whole team, because the rewards are definitely worth it.
Yeah, okay. And you've been lucky enough to go to number 10 Downing Street last year, twice.
Yeah, that's right. Again, I suppose perhaps I owe Alan Cairns, I do owe thanks to Alan Cairns for this. So clearly he didn't mind that heifer calf as much as I thought he did. But he sent an invite to me to go up to number 10 Downing Street for St. David's Day last year, which was just amazing. I mean, to receive that invitation, it came over email, but to look at the crest on the top of the letter, I think I had to look at it about six times over a couple of days before it really sunk in that I was going there. And what an amazing experience. I mean, to stand outside Downing Street and then walk through that door was just crazy. And then, a month later, I had another invite. Well, it was less than a month. I had another invite then, and this one came off the Prime Minister, you know. But I'm sure it wasn't from her, but I like to think that it was. And that was for International Women's Day. So she'd obviously picked up my name off the list and invited me there as a female dairy farmer. And, you know, to sort of think, gosh, I'm actually going again. It really was a once-in-a-lifetime amazing experience.
Oh, but I mean, what were the highlights? What was the best thing about it?
I think, well, actually just stepping across the threshold, through the door and into number 10. And then when you walk inside, I'm not really sure what I was expecting, whether it was going to be something a bit like James Bond, you know, with all sorts of technology around. But it is a typically old-fashioned London building. And we had to hand in our mobile phones in that first little area, and you put them just into a little wooden pigeonhole.
Okay.
I remember thinking, God, I hope no one's going to pinch this. And then you think, well, no, I'm in number 10. No one's going to pinch it.
Yeah.
But and then we queued to go up the stairs, the famous stairs that Hugh Grant dances across in Love Actually. And, you know, that was crazy. And they were portraits on the wall of every single prime minister.
Yeah.
Going right the way up, and then there was this sort of like giant portraits of the Queen and some very grand rooms, not particularly big rooms, but really grand, you know, great decor. And then to mill around for St. David's Day, obviously there were people there with Welsh foods and Welsh produce, handing them out.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there was this hush in the middle of the room, and you sort of turn around and there's Theresa May walking through the door.
Yeah.
To give a little bit of a speech. She wasn't there for long, but amazing experience. And to speak to so many amazing people that were there, it was out of this world. That's the only way I can describe it.
Be honest, because hardly anyone listens to this. While you were there, did you steal anything?
No. In all honesty, if I could have, I probably would have. No, there literally wasn't anything small to pick up.
That's really cool. That must have been a hell of a... And like you said, just sort of walking in and out through the door must have been awesome.
Oh, crazy. Yeah. It was... Yeah. You know, to take it, I took a selfie outside number 10 and I thought, what am I doing? This is amazing.
That's cool. Okay. So on politicians then, going back to the farm now, you've hosted quite a lot of politicians there on the farm, haven't you?
Yeah. So obviously with my involvement with NFU and our handy location to Cardiff, It's been a useful opportunity, sort of being a young and a female county chair. It's always an opportunity that you can maximise on at the time, and it was a chance for engagement with various politicians. So NFU Cymru arranged for Phil Hogan to come out to the farm. Obviously, you know, there was office holders from throughout NFU Cymru there on the day, and couple of young farmers and things like that as well, and he came out. So that was just before the referendum vote, and you know, that was surreal to be sitting. We've got a sort of an elevated viewing area above our milking parlour. To be sat up there with Phil Hogan was really surreal. And then equally, we had, I think again, I've probably got Alan Cairns to thank for this. So again, I'm very grateful to the Secretary of State for Wales for the interest that he shows in agriculture, and also as an MP, the interest that he shows in his constituents. But he arranged for Andrea Leadsom to come onto the farm. And I think it was the first farm that she'd been on in her role as Secretary of State for Environment and Rural Affairs. You know, that was unbelievable. So we had Andrea Leadsom, Alan Cairns was there as well, and Andrew R.T. Davis as the Welsh leader of the Conservatives.
Yeah.
And just by happy circumstance, when she was there, one of the cows decided to calve, and it had a girl, and it was an easy calving, if you like. And it just gave such a powerful message, really, because I was able to say, you know, this calf has been born today it will not, it's a female. She will not have her first calf until she's 2 years old. By that time, I will have spent approximately £1,800 to £2,000 rearing her. And it will take me a further year on top of that before I've recouped those costs and I start making profit. So we are going to be well clear of Europe by the time that happens, by the time I start turning a profit. And, you know, it was a really powerful message to make. So I'm very grateful to my cows for sorting themselves out on that day.
What
an amazing experience. We seem to get all sorts of strange people on the farm.
Do the politicians, I mean, something like that, for them, an experience like that, obviously something they not going to see every day. Do you think they respond positively to that then? You know, do you think that it really helps getting them out on farm where they can see it and speak to farmers?
Yeah, it definitely helps. There's, you know, I find this quite a lot. There's only so many things you can say to someone in an email or on social media. If you can actually eyeball someone and look them in the eye and speak to them from the heart and they can see you speaking to them in that way, it can leave such a powerful image for them. You know, it's much easier for them to associate with you and to remember you. And you know, it's a really powerful tool that we can all use as farmers just to try and get our message across.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I can't finish this without mentioning you winning Wales Woman Farmer of the Year in 2016 as well. That must have been a proud moment.
Yeah, that was another one of those moments where I read and reread the email, you know, about six or eight times before I thought, what, you know, is this, is someone having a laugh? Because that's the sort of thing that some of my young farmers would do. It was an amazing, I don't know, experience to receive an award like that and to think that, you know, I sort of managed to make a bit of a difference. It was a great day.
And just on that then, women in farming, do you think there's obviously becoming more women, young women going into farming, isn't there? Do you think as an industry we're doing well with that?
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, I think generally the industry is underestimated for actually the amount of women that are already in this industry.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, I just look at my mum or my nan, who's no longer with us, and I think of the work that they put in. And it's unfair to call someone a farmer's wife. There's no such thing as a farmer's wife.
Yeah.
You know, if you're on a farm, you are part of that farm. It doesn't matter if you're not actively engaging with the stock. You are part of that business. So I think the industry does well, and it's just trying to show that now. I can think of so many influential women in farming today, you know, not just in Wales and in the whole of the UK. And you know, it's great to see sort of names coming forward.
No, I agree.
You've got four daughters, haven't you? So, you know, you are contributing to the women in farming tribe.
Well, it'd be nice to think that at least one of them might have a crack at it one day.
Yeah.
We'll see. Okay, right then. So we'll finish off with five quick questions. So if you're ready, we'll go for it.
Right, okay, I'll do my best.
What's your all-time favourite song?
My favourite song. I've been trying to think of this. Probably only because, well, I say only. It reminds me of some really good times with young farmers. And it was a song All Together Now. And interestingly, it was by a group called The Farm. I can remember singing that a lot when we were in Blackpool on our way to Winter Gardens. And it was really good. Probably the other one, I might as well have a bit of a jib, is Who Let the Dogs Out? She sounded a lot in Cirencester for some reason. I'm not really sure why.
Well, I could think of a few songs as well. All right. So, if you didn't live in Wales, if you didn't live in our beautiful country, where else would you live?
Oh, gosh, I would probably live in Wyoming in America. Okay. Fantastic place to go and visit, and not too far from some amazing national parks. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of cattle there, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. As a dairy farmer, I've got to ask you, what's your favourite cheese?
Favourite cheese? Wensleydale, actually. I love Wensleydale. Wensleydale and cranberry.
I was just going to say, where do you stand on the cranberries in it? Is that, that's all right in your book, is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Chuck the cranberries in. Yeah, I have tried it with a few other various fruits, but cranberries win every time.
Yeah, I like cranberries, but some people get very annoyed when you mention fruit with cheese. Don't they? But, yeah, there you go. If you could time travel for a day, where would you go?
Oh, gosh, that's an interesting question. You know, my mum always says to me, you should always look forward, not back. So I certainly wouldn't go back. I would definitely go forward. I suppose I would like to see what my farm looks like in maybe 100 years time. I think, you know, it could have changed radically by then. It'd be great to come back in 100 years time and see what's here, see what we're doing differently. Yeah, is it still a dairy farm? Is it part of Cardiff suburbs by then? I'm not sure. hopefully it's still a farm.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, if you had to recommend a farmer or someone involved in agriculture to follow on social media to a non-farmer, who would it be and why?
I would 100% recommend following Luke Winton, who is the young lad who works for me. He's doing a fantastic job at promoting the dairy industry. For someone who's a new entrant into the industry, you know, what an amazing job he's doing of promoting what we're doing. So fair play to him. And if you want to learn a little bit about dairy, he's a young lad to go to.
What's his Twitter handle?
He is Luke_Winton, Winton.
Okay, cool. I'll give him a follow. All right, then, Abby, thanks so much for taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule to do this. I've really enjoyed
talking to you. No, thank you.
And we will hopefully see each other in just over a week at the NFU conference.
Yeah, we definitely will. There's a few drinks and walkabout afterwards as well, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Okay. All right, then. So that's it. And great to speak to you. And good luck for getting up in the crazy o'clock in the morning.
Thanks, Will. Thank you.
All right. And to everyone at home, thanks for listening and see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.